something like that happens, that is a kind of crux moment, and all of a sudden it becomes an imperative. I have to take this thing and I need to be making money from it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 83 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
We don't have a title for today, but what we did was, I had a really good idea yesterday, which of course I promptly forgot. It was such a good idea that I didn't write it down because I knew I'd remember. Then I didn't remember. So we turned up and we said, right, I don't really have an idea for today. And we started talking to each other about our week. And I said, stop. We're just going to do this as the podcast. So that's what you're going to get this week. So before we go back to some of those things that came up, without talking about them, what have you been working on this week?
This is how tired I am. I'm having to check the notes to see what I said I was going to say. I am preparing a talk for my membership, actually. We're doing a month about how artists find their way, kind of the artist journey, I suppose. And I've got various guest artists coming in to talk about their journeys, members of the group. But this week is me. And so yesterday I was putting together the images so that I can just share my screen on Zoom and show people what the pieces I'm talking about. And it's just really interesting when you do to look back, you know, really interesting. Like I can see some things that have been consistent all the way through, but also I can see how I was struggling and trying to do things that I just didn't know how to do. And as I was looking at the images, I can remember the frustration. And there's one I came across actually, which I was so happy because I put it on Instagram and I just got to know you on Instagram and you left a nice comment and I was so giddy I was high on my own success. And so I carried on working on it, completely lost whatever it had, which now I look at it, I think you were just being kind because there wasn't really much there. But I just remembered when I saw that image, I was like, oh, do you remember when Alice said something nice on Instagram to me?
It's funny. There's a friend of mine, somebody I know from school, and we're kind of vaguely in touch again. Anyway, she's an author. So she's just had book number, don't know what it is, 4 or 5 published. She writes those slight thrillery books for women. Anyway, her name is Amanda Jennings. Go and have a look. Anyway, she was on Simon Mayo's show this week and she just did a post on her phone, just like, oh, Simon Mayo, just saying Simon Mayo, just the 18-year-old me is so excited. And he sent me a text message afterwards. And it's that kind of thing, isn't it? And I know that people see it. They say, kind of see artists that they really like and they say, oh, so-and-so's just liked my post. I'm thrilled.
Do you know the best thing? I'll tell you the best thing that ever happened to me when I was doing my resume business. I wrote a blog post called 5 Things You Can Learn About Your Career from Ricky Gervais. And I was using Twitter at the time. So I tweeted it out as I always did with my blog posts. And then all of a sudden I saw the notification. Ricky Gervais had retweeted my blog post. Ricky Gervais.
That's so a good tip then, isn't
our
it?
Our website traffic went insane for that day. Whenever I looked at our website stats, we had this gigantic spike when all the Ricky Gervais fans came and looked at my blog post.
Did any of them hang around?
No, I'm sure they didn't. I mean, it would just depend on one of them needing a job at that time, wouldn't it? So I'm sure they didn't. But I mean, you never know. We may have got a few sales out of it, but it was just the, oh my gosh, Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
Knows. For a second, Ricky Gervais knows I exist.
But it's a good thing to do though, isn't it? That thing of looking back through your work. And you're right, the emotions that come up when you look at particular pieces, you can remember them so strongly. And I always amazed both at sometimes how accurate your memories and your reflections are, and also sometimes how inaccurate they can be. So you can look back at a painting that in your mind was fantastic. It was like a great painting. You look at it now and you think, uh-oh. And vice versa, you can have a painting that feels like, when you think about it, oh gosh, that one was a really struggle. I never really felt I made anything with that. And look back at it later and think, actually, do you know what? There's something in that. Quite like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very worthwhile thing to do.
Funnily enough, you remember I've talked for 2 weeks now about that sanded back painting. Mm. Well, I found an image of what it first was.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that I loved it, and then I lost what I loved about it. And when I looked at it again, I thought, that's really pretty good. I should have just stopped there.
Are you going to
learn? That was 3 years ago.
3 years ago?
3 years ago, I've had that canvas for 3 years. That's wow. It was my never going to be resolved canvas. But anyway, yes, so it's just been really interesting looking at those. And also thinking, you know, there will be people watching me talk who, when I get to my new really textured stuff, will be thinking, I really liked those soft landscapes mm-hmm. that you were doing 2 years ago with a clear horizon mm-hmm. line. I really don't like this stuff now. That's the other side of it, because there were some nice paintings. That's the thing that struck me about going back, was there were some nice paintings. When I thought I was failing, there were some really mm. nice paintings. It's just they weren't what I wanted to be doing. And that's a thing, isn't it? It's like you can look at it and think, that's very nice, but it's not me really. And I'm frustrated because I feel like there's more to come out.
And I think that that's always the way. And I think that's the difficult thing. Like, when we get stuck in the here and now, it's because we're actually still at that stage. And in 3 years' time and in 5 years' time, we're going to look back at now and see things like, why were you being so stressed about it?
Yeah.
You know, why were you worrying about it? It's just part of.
Yeah.
Just part of. But yeah.
So what about you this week?
Not so much on the art front, actually. A little bit more... developing of this mini sketchbook that I'm trying to do with it, and I haven't really shared much of it yet, is, do you remember how I spoke about not being thrilled or enthused anymore about going out and doing drawings of the lands? You know, it's just like, I don't know, not feeling it so much anymore. And then I was thinking, and I have this sketchbook that I actually started about 2 years ago, just by laying things on differently. And the idea was that you just go back to pages repeatedly, repeatedly at different times. And eventually the whole sketchbook kind of links together because you've got so many different elements that reappear throughout the whole thing. And it's similar to how I work in paintings, but I think I was trying to keep what was going on in the sketchbook. It wasn't matching up with what I see or what I feel from the landscape. So I did a little bit of thinking and writing about what is it that I feel from the landscape and what is it that specifically I'm looking for. And then I've started to mesh the two things together a little bit more in a new kind of sketchbook process that involves adding to the pages before I go out, then doing drawings, and then taking very specific elements and putting just those into the sketchbook when I come back. So that is kind of evolving nicely, but very, very slowly, I have to say. We've had some quite grey, drizzly weather here. Not nice, big, stormy sky weather. Not, you know, the rain's coming in and then it clears and it's worth going out and sitting in the car and waiting and then going out again. Just grey and flat and misty where you can't see anything. Can't do much in that. So instead, I have been making scones, which involves eating my way through a pot of clotted cream, which...
which you can do without putting on weight, and I would put on a stone by the end of the week.
Well, interesting, actually, since we've been here, I think... we don't have scales here, so I don't know, but I think I've lost a little bit around my tummy, so it must have just been being more active here. But yeah, making scones was my birthday treat. And I've had a few personal calls booked in, so I've been doing those. I enjoy doing those. And we have been working through Instagram. Thanks, Instagram. Can I just say, thank you so much, Instagram, for doing an update just as I get to the end of spending 2.5 months recording information about how to do things on Instagram. It's really thoughtful of you. So we've been doing that. But what I realized about that was, it's all very well knowing the whys and wherefores. And actually, when they change buttons and things, it doesn't make that much of a big difference. the theory, the process, the attitude behind it is all the same. So we had a session about social media planning, which I've avoided doing because I don't actually plan social media.
Is this in your membership group?
Yeah, it's in the membership, but I've also thought that this whole thing might be quite good as a standalone. So I'm trying to work out if that is an option or if anybody would be interested in that. So if you would, let me know. Not complete yet, particularly now because we've got to do this add-on bit. There is a lot to say about Instagram. But that's because I love it and it's a really great tool.
Yeah, and imagine each platform. There's so much to say about all of them.
And Facebook, things change all the time. But I think if you understand the basic premise and what the different parts are for and how to use them, then it doesn't matter if a few buttons change place, does it? And the other big thrill was finding some big canvases, finally. But we're going to talk about that when we get into some of the ideas that have come up this week. So let's move on to the not very focused
main topic. The not main topic. The in brackets, we don't have a main topic.
Yeah. Right. So this started with a discussion of what we had been looking at and listening to just in the last few days. And I said that I had found a podcast, which I'm not going to tell you the title of, but it kind of bothered me. It was about doing business as an artist. And there are short episodes. And in three consecutive episodes, she talks about how it's essential that, or how artists should really be making six figures for their business to count. And it just made me really cross because I remember when I first started thinking, and we're talking quite a long way back now, am I going to go back to work full time? What am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, could this art thing ever be a serious concern? And as soon as you get into the world of business, everybody starts talking about six figure this and seven figures it is now, six figures and seven figures. And when you're at the beginning, it's not what you want to hear. You just want to shove someone in the face when they start talking about stuff like that. So I just don't think it's very helpful.
That's annoyed you a lot. You've mentioned it before in different contexts.
Yeah.
People talking about six figures. And it's funny because I messaged you about a podcast that I thought you'd enjoy. It actually turns out it's been going for ages, but I didn't know that. I thought he'd not done anything for a while. But it's called something like Seven Figure Small. I sent it, I thought, I think I put in the message, I know this is going to annoy you, the title. But actually, he does say in the first thing that I listened to, it's not really about the seven figures or six figures. Yeah. It's about the idea of having a business and being small, not needing employees. That's what it's really about one person running a successful, and how it is possible now in this current world to get to seven figures with one person running a business and some freelancers, when in the past it never was. That's really the gist. But I knew when I sent it to you, oh, it's just going to push that button because it's not six figures, it's now seven figures.
Six figures isn't enough, people. But the thing is that when you're at the stage where that seems possible for you, don't have a problem with it. Where I find it's really not helpful, which is where I was I was looking to make, I don't know, my aim that year was £3,000. So hearing somebody talk about six figures was just like, it was such a way off. It didn't help me where I was to hear people talking about delegating things to teams and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that's why it's a trigger for me at that point. I can see when you need it. And also the thing that's interesting is, I think the thing that's interesting for artists, and this comes up a lot, like when we're talking about valuing our work and how we put prices on it, where we see ourselves fit in the realms of money and value and what we can charge for our work and what it's worth. And I see people do this all the time, is hold back what they should be charging because they don't think they can, or because they don't think they live in an area where they can. I've heard that twice this week. Where I live, nobody would pay more than £30. Really? Really?
Nobody.
Nobody.
I've been guilty of saying that in the past. Yeah. Not £30, but yeah. I've been guilty of saying nobody around here would spend any money on art.
Yeah. So how do we change this? I suppose the first question is, do you recognise yourself in any of this? And what has changed for you in order to take you from a place where you have I don't want to put words on it, a scarcity feeling about money into something where it's more allowable? Because I think that is a really important step, to put yourself in a position where you can see something be realistic, achievable, exciting, stretchy, quite fun, a bit outside your current comfort zone, but you're not holding yourself back. Because I think both you and I have had to do that, haven't we?
I've had to stretch and go outside comfort zones.
Yeah. Or do you think that you were always mentally in a higher space financially with your art because you came into it after being in a more experienced business world?
Oh, I don't know. No, definitely not. Because I'm definitely guilty of, I came into this with some skills in marketing and some ideas about marketing, but yeah. I didn't come in with any confidence about my own artwork, and I definitely undercharged over and over again.
Yeah.
And it came from partly a lack of confidence in my own artwork, partly that belief of nobody around here will spend that kind of money. This is a farming area. They're all farmers. Well, they're not all farmers. There's tons of well-to-do people move into areas like this and live in big stone houses and have plenty of money. That's rubbish belief, but I had it. And it's partly, and I think this is where we're all different, it's our upbringing and attitudes mm-hmm. to money, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What's interesting is I'm much more free with spending money than mm-hmm. you are,
yep.
I think.
Yep.
But I have a much harder time charging more money for things. Mm. So I'm all right giving other people my money. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But I don't like asking for it. Mm-hmm. Or I don't mind asking for it for certain things, but for my artwork, it was always an issue. And I wonder why that is. So I don't find it hard to sell a course and to say it's this much money. And to say that on a live stream on Facebook, okay, I'm launching it now and it costs £695, it was this year. I don't have a problem saying that. But looking at someone and saying my painting costs, let's say it was a 40 by 40 and I was going to say it costs £600, 40 centimetres by 40, that would feel, ooh, that's a lot of money.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Now, why is that?
I don't know. So is that relative value on objects? I mean, I think my thing comes from probably my parents and not having a huge amount of money as we were growing up. And when I say that, I don't mean we were poor. We weren't. My dad always had a good job, but there wasn't a lot of spare money for things. So we never spent money on, you know, there was never money for, you know, clothes, smart clothes. We holidayed in a camper van. All my parents' money went into things that would be thought of as kind of bigger savings. So, you know, they invested in a house. So it was all in the house, in the mortgage. It wasn't on this kind of flow of money coming in and going out on everyday things.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because we didn't have much money either. We're going to sound like Monty Python now. We used to live in a cardboard box. No, we
did. I never lived
in a cardboard box. No, we didn't have a lot of money. My mum didn't work when we were young, and my dad was just a sales rep. So, you know, we never had a lot of money for things. But my dad, when he did have a bit of money, he would spend it on things.
Right, like, so he was a spender.
I remember him buying a nice camera, and we had, for a while, we were taking photos together. And I remember he got a nice stereo system. And years later, my mum said, my dad died years ago, and she said to me, my brother's a bit rubbish with money. Mm. He never has any. And he's, she said, oh, he's like your dad. Your dad would have been like that if it wasn't for me. Which you don't know that about your parents, do you? You have no idea. So my mum obviously kept the household budget and made everything okay. And my dad was just allowed to spend on treats if he had a bit extra. So maybe it comes from that. I always saw that if he had a bit of extra money, he bought himself or us something, we'd get, you know, a bike or something nice. And they didn't invest or save, which meant that when he died when he was 60, they couldn't have retired. They didn't have any. They had a house, but that was it. And they didn't have any retirement money. My mum subsequently met someone else. He has a pension. She had enough from selling the house that she had been able to retire. But she said to me, I don't think we could have ever retired, you know, and gone to live somewhere we would have liked to live. We would have always had to stay there. Mm. So I've always had, I have a fear of money, of being poor. And I have a fear of when I've had very little money at times, when money's been tight, I'm very careful. But when it's not tight, then I'm not careful. I'm only realizing as I say this, but it's like my dad. So when it's not tight, then I don't go, oh, let me save all that money up for when it might get tight.
Yeah.
Because partly I think, well, you know, you might die and then you've saved all your money up.
But my dad's thing goes back to, this is the saving thing, when he was a very small boy and his father was they ran a country shop, and never really understood this, he was a Baptist minister, so I don't know if it's different in the Baptist church, but anyway, they ran a shop and they did this thing. They didn't have a lot of money, and once he got sent a postal order of money for his birthday from a godmother or something. And he gave it to his mum to buy the food for the week. And his father put it in the sermon. And then all the parishioners started, or all the people started donating money to them. And my dad being highly embarrassed that his father had told this story about his birthday money being what got the food on the table that week. So it's when you can look back, and that was a story that my mum had never heard. It only came out, like he only told her about 18 months ago. When you go back to that, you can see why he has always been interested in spending, saving and investing in big things. And I'm okay in, I seem to be okay in buying big things that I consider to be worth it. So we bought ourselves a new car. I mean, the last one we'd had quite a long number of years, and it had done a lot of miles, but that felt fine. I didn't worry about that. Whereas when I went to buy these canvases this week, so canvases, large canvases have been out of stock in the place that I buy them online for ages. And then they were going to be due in on the 17th of July. And then they were going to be due in at the end of July. They're still listed as a waiting stock. Anyway, so I was in this shop in Devon, which is a kind of really interesting, bizarre, it's like a department store, but in warehouses spread out. It sells everything, all sorts of everything. And I saw these really good, some of it's a bit weird, end of range stuff. Anyway, these were really good range professional canvases. But there were three of us in the car. We couldn't fit them in the car at that time. So I had to go back the next day to buy some. And the price had gone up from £38 to £40. And I asked the lady if she could discount them back to £38 for me. Oh, no. It just felt like, why would you not ask? Why would you not ask? And then she said, oh, no, I can't want so in the system. They're that. So anyway, that's fine. I bought them. But that, I mean, that's a really interesting difference, isn't it? The big things I'm okay with, the small things I quibble about.
Well, because I was also going to say that big canvases are not out of stock. I've bought some big canvases. Is it some big canvases at a certain price that were out of stock?
Well, they're not, the ones that aren't out of stock are more than double the price of the normal
ones. That's where it is again, isn't it? So
yeah,
you would not paint when you wanted to paint big, and wait and not buy the, because it's double the price, even though you know you'll sell that painting and get the money back?
I would have done, had it been September and I'm back and I'm ready to start painting, yeah, I'd have bought them, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm just thinking, well, I'll just wait until they come back in. Anyway, yeah, there they are, and I've got a big stack now.
I can't believe you asked for £2 off. I can't believe you asked for £2 off. When we were building this studio where I'm sitting now, Phil and I went to the local, we haven't got a B&Q, we've got like a local family-owned big hardware thing, and we went there with Andy, the builder, and we were buying whatever, I can't remember what. And then we just went to pay for it, and Andy said, what's your best price though? We're not paying that. What's your best price? And I was mortified. I was just kind of, they put the price on it because that's the price. And then they went off and they haggled backwards and forwards, and then they came back and we got 20% off.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you always ask in there. They always give you a discount. You daft if you pay the price that's on there. But I still haven't. I've been back since. I've not said when they say, oh, that'll be £15 for that scraper or whatever. Well, what's your best price? I just couldn't do it.
We had the opposite this week. We went, we had a curtain rail got pulled down, and the walls are very, that old wattle and door, very fragile. And we'd made the mistake of fixing the curtain rods straight into the walls, which had been, to be honest, a little bit wobbly for about 8 years. Anyway, somebody sat on them, pulled a curtain, pulled out of the wall, great big hole, right, how are we going to fix this? So we had to get a board across, fixed to the wall in multiple places. And there was massive traffic jam. We couldn't get into the big DIY shop. So we went to the small local one who didn't have quite the right kind of wood that we wanted, but pretty much it would do. So we got all the little bits and pieces, and we got to the till, and the guy had said, he said, oh, well, we've got this wood. He said, it's a bit pricey, mind. It's a bit pricey. So we said, well, that's okay. We'll have two. It was £9 for a length of wood that was a bit pricey. So when we got, we didn't say anything like, oh yeah, that's more than we thought. When we got to the till to pay for that and the fixings and the filler and all of the other stuff, he just said, I'll just knock a bit off for you. So that's his money mindset, isn't it? That he's automatically giving us a discount when we haven't even asked for it. But equally, we didn't say, he'd already done it and run it up in the till. You can't say, no, 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 put it back. You're a small business trying to make money, keep it as it was.
Yeah.
But we all have these things. This is the point. We all have these things, and we can't isolate it with your home life. It's like what you spend on supermarket shopping, or are you comfortable? You know, what wine do you order on a wine list? God, wine list. Can you imagine going out for a meal and ordering from a wine list now?
No, too many germs.
You know, that thing, whether you treat yourself buying the more expensive one or you always go second from cheapest.
Yeah, and see, I just would not, it definitely is from my dad, because now I can see it, that it's, if I've got the money, I'll buy the nice thing.
Yeah.
However, we need to get a new car, and we are going to need to at some point. We haven't bothered because we're not going anywhere. But at some point, Phil's car is going to completely conk out. We know it's got a fatal flaw, which is eventually just going to kill
fatal
it.
Fatal flaw.
And it's not going to be repairable except at great expense. So when it conks out, we need a new car. And I'm struggling with that because I'm not bothered about cars. And it's like, it's a lot of money just gone out the door. And I don't even care about my car. I don't wash my car. It's always got junk in it.
But it's not about that though, is it? It's about the anxiety of living with a car that you know might conk out and leave you stranded. And then it will be a pain to deal with.
Well, whereas, I'm all right because it's Phil's car, so it'll leave him stranded.
In that situation, I think it's got to be done at some point. I'd rather do it now when I'm making a decision about it cleanly and it suits me than wait for a disaster to happen.
Yeah, I should get just going in and haggling, and you have to negotiate. There's where you have to negotiate, and it's worse in America. You really expected to go in and negotiate for your car. And I've forgotten which brand of car it was. I can't remember. Came out when we lived in Canada, but they advertised it as no haggling. You don't have to. And they marketed it towards women, this car. And the main selling point was The price is the price. You just come in and buy it. It's already as cheap as it can be, and you don't have to haggle. And I was saying to Phil at the time, God, if we were getting a car, that's the one I would get. Like the whole marketing campaign was brilliant, because it just, the experience of going for a car there, I don't know if it's still the same now, but I found it really just stressful having to negotiate.
See, I love a haggle.
Do you want to
love a face
me and go
face to face haggle? Yeah, you need to go to on holiday to somewhere like Morocco or
no? See, because then I'll just give you whatever it says on. I really am now. Let's flip this round though. So we said you're more careful with spending than me, but you seem to find it easier to price your work at the right level.
And also,
I think you do big, what, and
big things, big things. Like I found it was okay. Okay, it made me feel sick for about the first 2 months that the studio rent went out. But I could see that was a big chunk. Like I said, that was significant and it was enough to make me feel sick. But I could see that making a decision on that was still going to be a good thing. And I could do that easily. So why I can do that each month, and I worry about canvases being 10 quid, £2 more expensive, doesn't make sense, does it? This is the point, is it's completely illogical.
Yeah. And so personal. And so if you get that mindset of the mindset I have of, I suppose somewhere I've got this mindset that art is a luxury thing that people won't want to spend a lot of money on. I must have that mindset.
Yeah.
And therefore that's part of what makes it hard for me to charge for that. Whereas a course, I know the value people are getting for that. Maybe so I should know the value they're getting for art, but a course is like you gain something by doing this course. You learn something new. You're a different person when you finish it than when you started. That feels easy to say, okay, that's worth a decent amount of money, that experience, that transformation. Why does it not feel okay to say that about a painting?
I think because a painting is more a value judgment on you.
Yeah.
I think in your mind, the price that you put on a painting is how you're valuing it. You're not seeing it from the point of view of what it means to the person who's bought it. Whereas the course, you can see that it's about the value for the person who's bought it. Whereas the painting, you're not putting it in the context of that person who's spent, you know, whatever money they've just spent on having their front door remade or their sitting room redecorated or whatever they've spent.
Yeah. And I think also because I would have, this goes back to what you were saying about decisions you make about money. I would in the past spend money on a course because I would think that's going to pay me back.
Yeah.
I would only buy a painting if I felt very flush. You know, if I felt like, okay, I have some spare money now, I can buy a painting. I've looked at paintings that I've really, really wanted and I've not bought them.
So where else in your life are there things that you really want that you don't spend money? Because you think it's an extravagance.
Yeah, I think it's things like, I was thinking things for the house or decorating the house, things for that. I like having my house to look nice. I like nice things, but I go to this particular antique shop, or I used to in the days when we used to go to shops, and I look around and find bargains in there. And so I was looking for ages for a little bench for our hallway, and I finally found one for £50 there and bought it, brought it home, painted it myself. I love antiques though. So I'll go looking at beautiful old pieces of furniture. And the only times I've ever bought things like that are the few times in my life when I felt really flush for some reason. Like one time in America, I remember we both were making a good salary and then I got a giant bonus and it was totally unexpected. And so we went to this antique shop and we bought some really nice pieces of furniture. But that sort. But see, I did it again. I got the bonus. I went and spent some of it on. Yeah. So I did my dad again.
What about twisting it when you do it the other way around? So, because I realized that on this spending thing for me, that one of the things that turned it around was not holding back on spending. And I think that there is a flip side to this, which is interesting. What I want to do is bring this round to how this affects us in our art. But one of the things for me was on not spending money on. So I have consciously been trying to make more of an effort over the last 3 years for it to be okay to spend money on things. So I still have a caveat, very strong caveat, if it's going to be used and appreciated, not just if it's going to be spent and wasted. So waste is a big thing for me. It's like waste is a massive thing for me. But for example, things like, I realized that I had stopped wearing perfume and I wanted to go and buy myself a new perfume. Perfume's quite expensive. And like, it's totally pointless. Totally pointless, really. Apart from a little squirt of it every now and again, makes you feel quite nice. Is that worth 70 quid?
Not to me. Can't stand perfume. Makes me feel sick.
So, but that was one of those things where I thought, you know, the purpose of doing this is something that I enjoy. It's purely for me.
Yeah.
I am going to keep looking until I find a perfume that I like, and then I'm going to buy it no matter what it costs. That's like buying a painting, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So getting into the hat, making myself do that, getting into the habit of thinking that way about something, whereas I might previously have thought, this serves nobody else but me, I'm not going to bother with it. Every time, if you like, that I do that, every time that I use that perfume, feels like a treat. It lifts me. So I think that there are exercises that you can do that would help with that. Now, where it comes back to painting, and this is the flip side of it, is that people who continuously buy and spend on materials add up to your art stock. I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago about how I probably have more paint than I need. I'm still going to go and buy some more, but I know that I will get through it eventually. What I'm not doing is buying, what could I be buying? A loom, because I want to have a go at weaving, and you know, a whole load of other different crafty things. I'm keeping it focused on something that I'm actually going to use. But I think, you know, I see this a lot, people buying on lots and lots of different things rather than focusing on one, because if you focus on one, you've made a clear decision, then you've said something about what's serious to you, and then you've got to make it work.
It's funny, I went years ago when I was getting back into my art and I was looking for classes or somebody, you know, somewhere to go. And I found this teacher in Ilkley, which is a bit of a swishy town near me. And it turned out to be all wrong for me because it was total beginners who'd never drawn. But so there were like 10 people around the table, never drawn or very, very rarely. And me, who was trying to develop some paintings. But what was funny was they all got stuff out of their bags and they had pristine sets of Derwent pastels or whatever, you know, just beautiful things that cost an absolute fortune that I couldn't afford at that point. But they'd not been touched. And then they'd lay them all out nicely on the table in front of them and then say, right, what are we going to do? And then that idea of, although I do sympathize because I like buying things.
Totally sympathize. Totally
buying art supplies. I just came back from, I'm looking at them now, from the art shop. I was in that same town and they have a little art shop, and I've not been in a shop for ages. So I put my mask on and in I went, and I felt bad because there's nobody in there and it's a really nice little shop. So I went looking for some things to buy, just so I could buy a few things. Mm-hmm. And I was just going to buy a few tubes of paint and maybe a brush, but I came out with a set of 24 Inktense ink sticks.
Oh yeah.
Which I've never used before. And they're just sitting there in their box pristine. So having said that about other people, I have a box of pristine Inktense ink sticks.
But you know you'll use them.
Like fun. I will have a go with them. I will, yes. I will do something with them.
I think we're all there with art materials, but that's often the same with clothes, isn't it? Sometimes you can buy yourself special clothes, like a nice dress, and you keep it in the wardrobe and you never wear it because it's the nice dress, it's the special dress. I think what you've got to do is make sure that you get it out of the wardrobe and wear it, or get those art materials out and start using them. Break into them immediately as soon as you get them back, and then they just become part of your realm. But the, so this is basically what we're saying is that there is a flow to this, isn't there? There's what you spend and what comes in, what you can expect to come in, or where you set yourself in terms of the value of what you expect to come in. And I think this is where it can be a really big problem for artists, because we've all grown up with this idea that artists can't make any money, don't make any money, maybe until after they're dead. And so therefore we have an expectation about what you can earn from being an artist. And I think that's something else that a lot of people have that holds them back. Or they don't necessarily make any attempt to match the two things together. Like, the creative process is one totally separate thing from what your earnings are. And they say something like, I'd like to be a full-time artist, but they don't actually work out how many pieces they can make in a year and what they're charging for them, and see that there's a massive gap between those two things. And when one person says, I'd like to make a living as an artist, that can mean a totally different figure than when somebody else says the same thing. So without going into specifics, but maybe this is something to do at home, what is your figure? When you say, I would like to make a living, or I would like to make X from being an artist, what is that for you? And then the game that I quite like to play is, where do you push that? Because there will be a figure where it feels comfortable. And this is the same when you're pricing a painting. There is a figure where it feels comfortable. And then if I ask you to double it, you'll say, no, that's far too much, right out of your comfort zone. And then you can just wind it back down again to a point where feels okay, but is perhaps pushed a little bit outside your existing comfort zone. And then look at where the gap is. So what would it take for your painting that you want to charge? Say you pick a price that's £300 and I say double it, and you say 600 is too much, and we dial it back to 450. What's the difference in your mind between a painting that you can charge 300 for and a painting that you can charge 450 for? That's the gap you've got to be working on.
Mm.
If it's important to you.
Yeah, if the issue of pricing the painting at that is to do with the painting, in my case, I think it's what you said, it's to do with valuing myself enough. And I think I'm getting better. But what you said about someone's business, I just want to go back to that, because you said, thinking about that as a business, so if they say, okay, I want to make £40,000 a year, let's say, from art, and currently I make 10. So now I know, what do I have to do differently to get that extra 30,000? Is it pricing? Is it making more paintings? Is it and different marketing? I like that idea of making it concrete. And a few years ago, we had the retreat at your house. I don't know if you remember, but you asked everybody, does it feel possible to you to make £20,000 a year from selling paintings? And people were shaking their heads. And then you said, what if you had to get £20,000? Mm. What if you had to get it to save a sick child? Mm. Could you get it then? And I remember thinking, of course I could.
Yeah.
Like, if I had to, of course I could. Mm. And we don't think that way, do we? With our, when we're a lot of people starting an art business, kind of, oh, well, I'll just make the paintings I make and then I'll see what I can sell them for. And then, oh, I'm not making enough money from this. And really, you do have to be that determined, as if you had a sick child in the hospital, that you need to make that much income. And really, that's what you did. You set out with a plan for how you were going to turn. I never set out with that kind of plan. I've never been structured enough in my life ever to think of things like that in that way. But I really admire that you went, right, I want to replace my graphic design salary with art sales, and therefore, what do I have to do? I mean, that's quite impressive.
And I understand it, because I think we don't want to muddy the waters of our creative time with putting ourselves under financial pressure. So I understand. And most of us come into this because we start off with creating art as a hobby, as a side venture, as something that makes us feel good. And when it starts to get all kind of stirred in with money, it gets complicated, which is why it's a tricky issue to discuss, because it has all of the things that we started off this conversation with, like all your inherited beliefs and everything that you see around you and all the things that the people you're mixing with and all of the comments of the people who come in and look at your work and go, who would buy that? You know, all of that stuff gets really muddied into it early on. But I think the point of that question, which is, you know, if you were really on the line, and this is interesting, because this is also what my coach says. She says she has some people who she works with for years and things never really take off because they're not really fully into it. And then something might happen in their lives, like their husband loses their job or something like that happens, that is a kind of crux moment. Mm. And all of a sudden it becomes an imperative. Like, I have to take this thing and I need to be making money from it. And that is often the point where people get the fire in their belly to do what it really takes.
Yeah.
And although we don't want to put ourselves under that kind of pressure, I think we kind of have to have that kind of thinking if that's important. And it's a constant revisiting, but I think we all tend to fall into the habit of telling ourselves particular stories that almost let us off the hook. So we tell ourselves a story. I'd like to make money from my art, but artists don't make money. Therefore, that's okay. Why I'm not.
Yeah.
Or rather than saying, I'm doing art because I really love it, and if I make 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 pounds a year from selling it, I'm perfectly happy with that. I don't have to be making a full-time income from it in order for it to be important to me. You know, that's another way that it gets twisted. People think, like, this is only important to me if I say I'm making a full-time income from it. Who says? It can be just as important to you, regardless of what's coming. You've just got to be honest about where you are, where you sit, what you really want. And if you really want it, are you really doing it that way? And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you sit on that realm.
If you don't want that to tie money up with creativity, then I think it's totally valid to decide that and then decide to do a job to pay for the creativity. So to do a job that pays for the creativity, so to work in a shop or work in a cafe or work in an office or do whatever, or run another business on the side that pays for that creativity. Because for some people, putting money into the mix and complications is just going to ruin the pleasure of the thing in the first place.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to undervalue it. I think that's what I'm saying about that, is that it doesn't have to mean that your creative progress, your art, is any less important. And you should value it any less if you're not saying, here is my full-time artist flag that I'm sticking in the ground. Don't think it's about that.
Here's another thing I just wanted to mention as well, while we're on the subject of money and artists, because it's just popped into my head, that I used to have this perception, and I'm going to admit this now, that if I saw someone who was a full-time artist, I assumed someone else was paying the bills. I assumed, and it made me angry because I was jealous. It made me angry because I wanted that. Yeah. Like, I can't do that. And you get to swan around being a full-time artist. Ha ha, bet you never sell anything. And I knew a few people who that, you know, personally know a few people who I felt that about. And the builder was telling one of his customers about my studio, and he said, I've just finished building. And the guy said, what's it for? And he said, it's an art studio. And the guy said, oh, right. And just completely brushed it away, apparently. And assuming that I'm some dilettante dabbling away doing nothing, and I've just had this built. And I thought, that's exactly the attitude I used to have. Mm-hmm. And
but I bet you've changed. I bet you've changed Andy's attitude as well, though, your builder, haven't you?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
He started being supportive about his daughter at school, who's really talented. She's very creative and talented at art, much more than I was at her age. And he's much less critical of it. But what he has told her is, you've got to learn to talk about it. It's the talking. It's the talking about it. But yeah, that idea of that, my attitude to that came from the fact I assumed artists couldn't make money, just like whoever that guy was whose attitude was that. The attitude is, well, can't be anything. You know, you can't ever do that. And that's one thing that Phil, my husband, he never had that. He never said, when I said I wanted to do it, he never at any point said, well, of course, you'll never make any money from it. Mm. He was always encouraging. And that, I think, is something that probably our partners or families' attitudes to art and money can affect whether we feel like we can go on that path as well.
Yeah, and I think for me, my family's attitude was always that a bit. You know, I think I've spent 20 years, 25 years of my brother having digs about dabbling with art and making pictures for greetings cards and things like that, you know, all the time, every time we meet, you know. And even now you get an email that says something like, hope you're having fun making more little paintings or something, you know. It's
have you not seen how successful you are, though? Does he not know how successful you are?
I suspect he probably doesn't want to admit that to himself. But the thing is that for me, it was almost like a challenge. Like, that's your attitude. I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep at this until I prove you wrong. That's the stubborn in me. That is the, I'm going to do something. And if it doesn't work, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to try something else. And the first time I do something, it isn't going to work. I'm going to just keep going until I get better at it. I get better at it. You know, I start off with a mailing list of 40 people and you just keep going, because what's the alternative? There isn't an alternative for me. So, but it's a difficult thing, but it builds over time. I think this is like a muscle, but I think this constant checking back in, where are the stories that you're telling yourself? What can you find that challenges it? You know, what rules are you setting up for yourself? But also in terms of money, I think it's really interesting that we've kind of separated this, whether the issue is with what comes in or what goes out and what you feel about saving or spending and whether it's worth it. Really good. I hope we're not going to regret saying all of this out loud and publicly.
We've said lots of things we probably regret if we ever listen back.
Oh, don't even go there. Right. Well, we did think also that we were going to have a second conversation, which was about the idea of creation versus curation on content. So maybe we should save that for next week, shall we?
Yeah, I think we should.
Right. Well, we'll save that for next week, which is good because it means we know what we're talking about next week. But
we could even plan. We could even make some notes before we start.
But just before we wrap up then, so tell us what has inspired you then this week.
Well, it's not so much an inspiration, to be honest, as enjoyed, but it's a podcast that I've started listening to. It's been going for a few years, called Reply All. And I highly, highly recommend this podcast to anybody. It's two guys. I don't know who they are. They're obviously friends. They have really good chemistry. And they talk about the internet. It's a podcast about the internet, but about the obscure realms of the internet and odd things that happen on the internet. Uh-oh. And they just report strange stories. And for example, they have some episodes where one of them will find a tweet that they don't understand, and it'll be a tweet that's kind of an inside internet joke, and then they'll decipher it and explain it to the others, and you get to learn. So I learned all about this guy who was a famous person on Musical.ly before TikTok TikTok used to be called Musical.ly. Yeah. They had one episode where they told the story of this guy who was super famous on Musical.ly and then did some really stupid things and then disappeared because all his fans got angry with him because of the stupid things he'd done, and then reappeared 4 years later pretending to be someone else with a different name.
Oh,
but everybody knew it was him. So it's these things which a certain subset of the internet knows all about, but you don't know anything about. And the way they tell the stories, even when it's something you're not interested in, is just funny. And it's really, really good. So it's called Reply All. I highly recommend it.
Okay, that sounds good. I promised I would report back about the end of the film Parasite. So
don't spoil it for me.
Well, I was just thinking, how am I actually going to talk about this? So last week, cliffhanger, we had finished watching midway through, and things were all kind of a little bit fun and japery and a little bit black comedy, but, you know, quite fun. And Paul said he thought it was going to have a happy ending.
I'm guessing
I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there. But it's really good. It's really good. We really enjoyed it, and I'm just really enjoying watching the, you know, film with a beginning and a middle and an end. It's very satisfying. But no more new ones since then. So I need to get some more film action going on. That's it from me.
Didn't someone used to say that? That's it from me and that's it from him. Was it Ronnie Bark?
I think
Ronnie's?
It was the Barkers, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a really funny thing. We need to start. I wonder, you probably can't put a quote, at the, an audio quote at the end, can you? Because it will be within copyright. Right, that's it from us then this week. And we hope that has given you a few juicy ideas around money that will help you in your art practice. Talking of which, if you would like to help support the podcast, and this primarily goes to help to pay editing, you can donate £3, buy us a coffee. You can do it once or you can do it on a recurring basis at ko-fi.com/artjuice. And there is a link to that on both of the podcast pages on our websites, alicesheridan.com or louisefletcherart.com. So please only do that. We are aware at the moment that, you know, money might be tight for some people. So only do that if you feel you can. We don't want to put anybody under pressure to do anything, and we are still going to be here, but it does mean that we can help keep showing up. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hang on a sec. What are you doing, dog? Hang on. Don't be sick. Hang on. Come on. Real life. We're back. She's probably just eaten too much rabbit poo. Right.